Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Corey Levy, and I'm the founder of zFellows, a one-week accelerator for undiscovered talent. It's a pleasure to welcome some zFellow alumni today to our panel. We are about to dive into the minds of some of the most driven Gen Zers and explore their visions for the future. Before we jump in, though, let's set the scene. We are at the heart of the hustle economy, where the traditional 9-to-5 is making way for a world that values more self-direction and entrepreneurial spirit. The conventional college path is beginning to lose its appeal, and we're seeing exciting changes in how young people are plotting their careers. We're witnessing a fundamental shift in work, technology, and education. And this is reflected in the stories of our exceptional panelists today. To quickly introduce our panelists, we have Ethan Thornton, who is 20. He dropped out of MIT last year at the age of 19 to start Mach Industries, a defense company, and recently raised $80 million from Sequoia and others. We have Ali DeBoe, who just turned 22, and she recently raised millions of dollars and dropped out of NYU to launch Swish, a photo social consumer app. And we also have Stephen Schwartz, founder of WAP. It's a marketplace for the coolest internet products. Hundreds of millions of dollars have been transacted on their platform, recently raised over $40 million, and he's our only college graduate sitting up here today. I'd like to start out with one sort of like group question, and then we'll go kind of individually from there. We have a bunch of young people here. We have a bunch of old people here. What's one thing that you think this audience or your parents don't understand about your generation? Ali, do you want to begin?
Yeah, so I think one thing that's really crucial to understand is we're really not that different. The problems we have are very similar. Like, we want love, we want success, we want validation. While the solutions look really different nowadays, may that be through AI, may that be how we consume, how we show our love, it's all very, very similar problems. It's just about how the solutions have adapted throughout generations. So rather than connecting based on solutions, finding the common thorn to where the problems lie is, I think, where you're going to find a lot of threads that are similar across generations.
Steve, I think Gen Z's crazy. I don't think that we're the same at all, honestly. I think that the new generation does not like to plan at all. They like things now. They think that they don't have to worry about problems that are far away. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing either. But I think that kind of that sums up a lot of Gen Z. It's like, what do I want right now? I'm going to try and do that and be really confident in doing so.
Ethan?
I would say for at least like my background, the people I've been exposed to, the most surprising thing would be like how conscientious a lot of us are. I think many of us see us as kind of drifting through life, social media obsessed, whatever it is. But I think many people are deeply aware of sort of the state of things, deeply aware of the challenges facing us. I think it'll be interesting to see as more of our generation graduates college, what we do to combat those things.
Awesome. Thanks for answering. I'd love to jump into the topic of sort of future of work. Steven, some people on WAP are making individually millions of dollars and they're living in their parents' basements. How does this reflect the broader attitude that Gen Z has towards money, success, and personal fulfillment?
Yeah, I think that Gen Z does not look at success just tied to money anymore. Gen Z wants to feel like they have purpose and they definitely don't want to be told what to do by random people that are in a 9-to-5 climate. And when you put these two things together, you get someone that does make millions of dollars. It doesn't really care where they live. They actually just love doing it. And I think that kind of sums up the Gen Z mentality. They just want to feel purpose. They want to be working on something exciting. And they don't really care about making money and following the traditional path to success.
Ethan, I'd love for you to add, what role do you believe entrepreneurship will play in shaping the economy of the future? And what is the future of work look like for Gen Z?
It's a great question. I think at every generation, right, you see a massive turnover in companies adding value. I think the defining factor for our generation will be the ability for a small group of people to have outsized impact. I think it's pretty evident in software with the effects of AI, even in hardware though, right? We've seen decentralization of analysis tools, decentralization of machining. I think a very small company can have a much larger effect than previously could, and I think that'll cause some interesting trends.
Interesting. Hallie, there's a story our parents often tell us, which is go to a good school, you'll find a great job. I think we're seeing today that not be the case. Can you tell us a little bit of what is going on with highly educated people not being able to find their dream job?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like anecdotally speaking, I would have graduated this year, class of 2024. So all my friends are about to graduate. And it's so crazy to think that what you would imagine to be the most successful person went to a good high school, went to an Ivy League education, did the top university program major, can't get a job. And like, while it's not for a lack of trying, it's more so a reflection of the fact that the talent of Gen Z isn't actually reflected upon the jobs that are needed right now. That's to say, not only because the jobs become inundated or even boring, most of my friends who were interning in New York City, for example, last summer, who did consulting jobs, would work like an hour a week and have AI basically make their presentations and just have fun the rest of the week. But all their bosses thought they were working really, really hard all week. So I think to Stephen's point around like Gen Z is actually craving a sense of purpose, the jobs don't actually reflect the sense of the true capabilities and the capacity to what they're able to do, which is really disheartening and frustrating.
Stephen, I'd love for you to chat a little bit about digital nomads and sort of the future of where you think people want to live, work. It's the big cities, small cities.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of travel. I mean, you said it in your question, like what is the future of nomad life? And the reality is that you can contribute a lot of value to society wherever you are in the world now. And you no longer have to go into the office, and you probably don't want to. Maybe if you're working with cool people, you don't mind. But I think generally you can be in Bali and contribute maybe the same, if not more value than someone in New York that's going into a consulting office building PowerPoints each day. And I think that Gen Z is finally realizing that. And with so much information online about what you can actually do and where you can get started, I think that more people than ever are nomads, and it's probably going to continue.
Let's talk a little bit about college and education right now. 75% of the people on this panel, they don't have college degrees, including myself. Ethan, you dropped out of MIT your freshman year. Want to talk a little bit about your views on the role of higher education in 2024?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think fundamentally, our generation at least needs to separate the idea of financial success from college. I think college still has a very important role to play in our generation. Interesting, I mean, this is purely anecdotal, right? But we're standing up a new production facility, and a lot of the technicians we're hiring are making more than MIT engineer MIT engineering graduates. So I think across the board, there's been this mismatch between college degrees and work that truly needs to be done. That being said, I mean, you touched on it, right? Like a lot of our generation isn't as obsessed with money and doesn't concern themselves as much with pure financial success. So I think for many industries, aerospace being one of them, right? Like you won't see me being able to run complex CFD models having not finished sophomore year of college. So I think it still absolutely has a role. That role is non-financial. I think another interesting trend is the need for young people to find sort of a sense of community. If anything, that's the most important role college has played for at least the last 50 years. I think it'll be interesting to see how our generation sort of fills that gap as fewer and fewer people graduate from college.
Ali, what about you? Views on kind of higher education in 2024?
Yeah, I think Ethan puts a really, really good point around the idea of community. So I think while you look at 2010s as like a place where the internet was able to become online to meet so many different people, may that be through Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, like you're able to meet such a mass people if you don't want. Now I think in the 2020s, the advent with what socials and the social utility that really brings is not necessarily a sense of actually meeting people, but actually making friends. Like you know that you could reach out to anyone in the world, but the idea is like you could be in this room right now and like quite literally have thousands of people around you, but feel very lonely. But being around a few key people really makes you feel connected. So I think there's going to be a lot of sense around colleges, around bringing that sense of community. Even people who I know maybe who left college came back, again, not for financial reasons, not for professional reasons, but because they wanted a sense of community and culture and camaraderie around a shared experience.
Stephen, you have a college degree, but many of the people you hire and work with don't. Why do you think that's the case? Do you think the demand for college is going to differ?
The demand for college, will it differ? I think that traditionally you've had to have college because that's what employers look for, and it served as a stamp on your resume. But to some of Ethan's points, they don't really teach you what you need to know to contribute really highly impactful, with high impact, as much as they used to necessarily. So I guess like you definitely just don't need as much of the educational aspect of college anymore. To the community point, very, very true. people that I work with, I think we have maybe 15 to even 20 people at our company that did not get a degree. And when I think about what they look for in our company, for example, it is very much the community aspect. And you can really tell that they didn't have that. And when I think about the people that did go to college, they're not applying any of their skill set that they learned in college to their actual work. But they had the community aspect. So I think that that's spot on to Ethan's point. And that's really the only demand for college, I feel like, now.
Allie, let's talk a little bit about ChatGPT and AI, two very popular kind of topics. How are you seeing Gen Z use these tools, and are they dangerous or additive to our society?
Yeah, I think it's similar to like the advent of the internet, right? Like when the internet came out, like it was this novel thing where we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know how people were going to use it to their advantage, abuse it to their disadvantage, or whatever it may be. And I think you sort of see it in three key aspects. The first being academically, like my last semester at NYU, if you were to go into BOPES, the library, every single person was using ChatGPT to write their final papers. While some professors liked it or didn't, that's just the case of the matter. The second, career-wise, I spoke to the example of consulting earlier, like most of my friends have a ChatGPT-esque way of writing most of their stuff that they don't need to. And then even socially, right? Like, I had a friend two nights ago telling me at dinner that while he was at dinner, he was running an LLM model to train his 300,000 iMessages so he could respond to girls on Hinge and Raya quicker through an AI. So you're seeing this on a huge scale. And this is not to say, again, that like it's negative or positive. Like the internet, the AI, it's a tool. It's a matter of how you use that tool. And I think with the right guidance, the right community, the right people around you, and right values, any tool can be used for good.
Ethan, do you use ChatGPT? How are you sort of seeing this impact your peers?
I think for me, I'm obviously in the hardware space. I think the real implications of what it'll mean haven't truly been seen yet. I think give it a year and the effects it'll have on not ChatGPT, not LLM specifically, but the effects it'll have on hardware, on manufacture are going to be incredible. I think for my industry, we've seen massive impacts from like automatic target recognition and autonomy in flight and things that are concerning, but will certainly play a role in modern warfare. So I think it'll be interesting to see. I think a lot trickles down from what you're saying in the next 2 to 3 years in hardware.
Awesome. Let's move on to a little bit about technology. Steven, Gen Z is often seen as being sort of glued to their phones. I'd love for you to share with this audience how you're seeing people in their teens and early 20s use their phones.
Yeah, people in their teens and early 20s are spending a lot of time on their phones, of course, and they're really just consuming content from other people in similar interests and similar communities that they relate to. And I think that with the internet, like Ali was mentioning, you can now just connect with anyone across the world, and there's endless value to be consumed online. So that's why you have all the algorithms on TikTok and Instagram Reels that people spend a lot of time on, because they can consume so much in one sitting. So what do they consume? They consume anything from entertainment to how to date more effectively, to financial advice, to who's playing in the sports game tonight, to where their friends are going this weekend. I mean, it's just information overload. Imagine what you consume in real life, but on steroids, but all day and all day.
Ali, social media is just constantly evolving. Be Real was hot one day, now maybe less so. What trends do you predict will dominate the social networking space in the next 5 years? And are, you know, people still just heavily using TikTok, Instagram, and Snap?
As I alluded to earlier, I think the problems are the same thing. So like we feel lonely. The solutions are of course going to evolve. And I think that goes quite along with like this general trend you see in sort of all macroeconomic trends, which is like the bundling and the unbundling. So for example, Facebook is like this huge bundled thing where it's like messaging and video and media. And I think now we're starting to see the unbundling. May that be with marketplaces like, you know, like WAP or being able to host events and like Posh. Being able to unbundle these things are really, really exciting because it's a time for new technology to come out and for new better tools that the bundled tools have been able to create throughout the last decade to now kind of raise that bar. So I think you're going to be able to see a lot more social utility now in social media as you're able to sort of understand the next generation, the next decade of social demands higher value and higher intent.
Ethan, you spend a lot of time in the defense sector. What do you believe are the key technological advancements your generation will bring to this sector? And how do you see these innovations impacting global security?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a few theses around specific technologies. I mean, Trey was up here. I think the work Anduril is doing in drone defense is very, very impressive and much needed. For me specifically, I see the stratosphere as being the most important domain of the next century. Happy to talk more offline about that with any of y'all. I see like the need for long-range precision fires. I think as drone defenses get better and better, we're going to see this decentralization, and then we'll need some way of re-centralization as a country if we look to continue to operate the way we have been. I think manufacture will continue to look fundamentally different. Right now, every F-35 we produce is made in 1,100 different factories. If we expect to have secure supply chains, we can't be doing that anymore. So I think that'll lead to smaller, less centralized companies, each doing more centralized factory or building more centralized factories around specific technologies.
Stephen, in a world where these traditional sort of metrics of success are increasingly questioned by Gen Z, how do you personally define success, and how do you see your generation sort of shifting the paradigms of what it means to be successful?
Yeah, being successful for Gen Z is really about being happy. And happiness is ultimately broken down, I think, into are you learning? Are you hanging out and spending your time with people that you relate to and identify with? And a lot of times that both of those are achieved through work. So I think that's what Gen Z really cares about. To our points earlier, it's not really motivated by financial or these stamps on your resume anymore. It's a lot more oriented around if you're intellectually being challenged and if you feel like you're contributing positively to the world. And if you're doing all those things, then you're successful.
Allie?
Yeah, I think there's a lot around happiness, satisfaction, fulfillment that we sort of all alluded to earlier. I think when you see that so much can change over a year, over a few years, or even during COVID, and things can be quite fleeting, you understand that there has to be a larger goal or larger purpose that you're working for. So someone might not necessarily work for a job because of the paycheck or the prestige anymore, but it's more the value. Towards Ethan's point around intent, there's a higher intent than Gen Z has. Even when you're buying something, right? People are like, oh, who is the founder? What's their purpose? Where does the materials come from? What's the mission of the company? These higher intent actions then drive this sense of like satisfaction, value. Is what I'm doing in my daily life aligned with my values? And is this the life I want to create for myself? And I think that's something Gen Z has very much taken to heart.
Ethan?
Yeah, I think success is continually being pushed more towards sort of individual metrics, right? Like I think we've discussed that many times over. For me specifically, I'm obsessive, right? Like I love building things, I always have. That's how I'll continue to find my own success. And I think there is a large group of founders who feel that way. I think generationally, I expect to see a push sort of counterbalancing social media back towards more sort of traditional feelings of belonging and community. And I think we see that as companies too, right? Like I think the role of company culture is increasingly played a bigger and bigger sort of portion of where people continue to work.
I'd love to talk a little bit about talking. I think Gen Z, people may say they don't talk. They're just sort of on their devices. Can you tell us a little bit more about this, and where do you think the attention span is going right now? There's some parents, probably new parents in the room right now. If you could teach a new generation a skill, what would that skill be? Stephen?
Being intellectually curious, I think. I think there's a lot of people, especially in the older generations, that they want to just go through the motions and they want to check all the boxes. But I think, to Ali's point earlier, just like Gen Z really wants to make sure that they are aligned with all the different aspects in their life. And that takes a lot of curiosity. You have to ask who the founder of some random energy drink you're buying, or what their mission is, or what their purpose is. And to Ethan's point, he's driven by building things. Like, that isn't really normal and traditional, I don't think, for the prior generations. So I would try and instill curiosity into the new generation.
What do you think the best ways of doing that are?
I think you have to show them what is possible. You have to show them all the different places you can go, all the different people you can meet, all the different paths of life, and making sure that the new generation understands there's not just one way to do things. And I think that once they realize that, they'll push the limits and be really curious.
Ali, what do you think some of the big problems facing young people today that are left to be sort of solved by technology?
Yeah, for sure. I think to this point earlier, it's not just about meeting people, but actually about going deeper with people. It's very, very difficult to feel like you're connected to a strong community. It's sort of this quality over quantity thing, because it feels so silly. You might have thousands and thousands of Instagram followers and feel so lonely inside. Or be able to go to a party and know that there's 100 people on the RSVP list and realize that there was no one you really spoke to. This understanding of loneliness is almost this gaslighting effect, because it's like, why are you so lonely? You have so many followers. Why are you so lonely? You have so many people around you. But in reality, it's the same loneliness and the same thing that makes people feel really isolated. And it's almost like you don't want to share anymore, which is why a lot of these social media platforms like TikTok and Instagram have actually formed different communities on there that have made people feel not these group connections, but these one-on-one connections around the world, which is another point to, I think, what makes this generation very, very special, which is that we're the most global generation ever. And that's dominated by the fact that social media has allowed for common interests to really prelude just borders that we see in the world. I think that's a really, really wonderful thing for human development, humanity, empathy across borders. So I think this idea of this connection and loneliness is something that's still yet to be solved and just continuing to be adapted as our world changes.
What do you think some of the best ways of solving that problem should be?
Yeah, this is just like even a personal thing. Like, I made a conscious decision a couple months ago to spend 80% of my time with my 5 closest friends. While if anyone knows me, I'm a super social person. Like, I love people. I'm literally building a social app. I love it. But at the end of the day, if you're constantly meeting new people, like, this is their sense of like, who do I really matter? We ask about retention in terms of like an application or a product, but there's also a sense of retention in terms of relationships. Like, who keeps coming back? How do you build retentive relationships? So I think making a conscious effort to spend the time you have, your leisure time with the few people you really, really care about and being able to go deep on those relationships, I think is a huge value add and really, really important for a human psyche.
Ethan, technology has made role models more accessible than ever before, especially for your generation. How do you see this changing the way your generation finds and interacts with their inspirations? And who are some of your inspirations to be working on such an important company?
It's a great question. I think it's sort of like you mentioned, right? As these things become more ubiquitous, you have to focus on certain like smaller, more attainable aspects of life. I think for us, role model wise, as role models become more not approachable, but more visible, and as we can see more, I think that the role models in your day-to-day life become more important. Sorry, I'm not being very articulate right now. But as we're flooded with 1,000 different people, right, it's harder to find any gravity through individuals. So for me, I mean, my role models, largely because of that, have just become my parents, my grandparents. I deeply, deeply respect the work my ancestors have done to get us to where we are. I think on a broader level, I do worry quite a bit about the death of the role model, right? Like as you can see every corner of someone's life, people that you used to be able to look up to are very clearly not people worth looking up to. And I think that's a challenge my generation is going to have to face.
To close, I'd like each of y'all to do one little quick game. What's one trend that you think is in? What's one trend that you think is out? Steven.
One trend that is in is working for yourself. One trend that is out is 9-to-5 work.
Allie.
I think one trend that is in is social utility. I think one trend that is out is social media.
I am not very trendy. I think one trend that is in is working towards sort of a greater good. I think as the problems facing us become more clear, I think one trend that is out is chasing financial success.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.